Howdy folks, this is The Good Speaking. Thanks for tuning in. Make sure to like and subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and TikTok. Enjoy the gold.
Justice for Barb. Barb is back. She's out for blood.
Well, you know, Isaac, when we started watching rom-coms for this first week of February, I didn't think we'd be watching a horror movie in the making, sort of a prequel.
I didn't either.
Mm.
Ah, wow, edge of my seat.
Yeah, this movie gave Carrie a run for its money. As to
it really
just
did, yeah. Oh, what a
cold, calculated, sociopathical nature of this.
Yes, stealing identities.
Yeah, identity theft is not a joke, Jim. It's fucking, yeah.
Not a joke on Valentine's.
So this is a movie about a skinwalker.
A skinwalker, yeah.
About the scariest myth of Native culture, the skinwalkers. They steal, they'll eat you and steal your identity, walk among you.
That is terrifying.
Oh, truly horrifying, oof. Really. And you know what else is horrifying, Isaac? The fact that we haven't introduced ourselves yet. Welcome back, everyone, to the Good, the Bad, and the Boys podcast. We are your terrified host. I'm Taryn.
I'm Isaac, and we are continuing February leading up to Valentine's Day, doing some romantic comedy, as we just mentioned now. We are starting off today with a horrifying Silence of the Lambs type film.
Oh, yeah.
Sierra Burgess is a loser.
This girl gave Carrie just a run for it.
Yeah.
She's like Elijah Wood's character in, what was it, the black and white one. Sin City.
Oh.
It's like Elijah Wood's character in Sin City.
Oh, Sin City.
Just cold. Doesn't make an expression.
Oh, shoot.
Even when his arms and legs are cut off.
God. Terrifying image. But yes, what a movie. So this is on Netflix. Just came out.
2018.
And, 2018.
Yeah, it was a pretty new movie.
3 years ago, almost. And I guess it is a modern retelling of a, continuing with our French themes. We started off this week with Moulin Rouge. Go check that out if you haven't, and go watch that movie. It's great. We are continuing our French-American adaptations. This one is based off of Cyrano de Bergerac, Edmond Rostand's play, I guess, written in, like, 1897.
Yeah, so a play written by French poet Edmond Rostand in 1897, about a guy named Cyrano de Bergerac, who lived in 17th century.
You
France.
Said that perfectly.
I
had such a hard time with that.
Yeah, 1680s, like 1618 France. He was born. He himself was a novelist, a playwright, and a duelist, which I noticed a distinct lack of dueling in Sierra Burgess is a loser. A distinct lack of really any of the themes in Sierra Burgess is a loser.
Wow.
Yeah, I suppose. Seeing as this is a lore channel, shall we dissect the lore of the play that's so poorly ripped off? I think it just kind of shoehorned a scene in that was similar-ish, and then completely disregarded all of the themes and character traits of Cyrano.
Interesting. I did not read the synopsis of Cyrano.
So Cyrano de Bergerac is about, I believe he's a playwright named Cyrano, based off of the actual historical figure, who falls in love with this girl named Roxanne, and he's a very articulate man. He's very worldly and knowledgeable, but he has this big fat fucking nose.
Roxanne.
Go watch our Moulin Rouge review. It came out on Monday. But he has this big fucking honker nose that he's really insecure about. The nose is kind of his insecurities. And there's another man who loves Roxanne. His name is Christian. And he is a real hunk. He's a cadet in the French army. But he is a dipshit. And they both, in the first act, vie for her attentions. And they even wrestle. They rumble a little. But eventually they come to the conclusion that neither one of them is good enough to win her affections on their own. So they decide to do it together. They come together to woo her and use their skills to compensate for the others. So Cyrano writes her beautiful letters, just the most kindly worded ones. And Christian, he's the face of the operation. He's hot. And the play became so famous because of, the psychological profile that came out of it. It was something called Cyrenoids, which was, I know, I went so far down the rabbit hole of lore behind Sierra Burgess is a loser. Nowhere in like the
honestly
the movie
she is super complex. I don't blame you.
Is again, so here we are psychoanalyzing the serial killer of Sierra Burgess. Nowhere in like the Netflix
girl of many faces
description or the movie or anything is Serrano de Bergerac referenced. It's I guess kind of in the name Sierra Serrano Burgess Bergerac is, I guess, the closest it comes to it.
Oh, okay.
As well as a scene in the movie, which is like the Zoomer mimic of a scene from the play. And the scene from the play that garnered so much attention was one where Christian stands on like below Roxanne's balcony at night. She can only see his silhouette, and he tries to talk to her, but he's coming off as a dipshit. She doesn't know why he's acting like such a dumbass after his beautiful, well-worded letters. And she's about to storm off when Serrano, out of Roxanne's line of sight, like under the porch or something, starts feeding him lines to say. And so Roxanne believes it is Christian who is saying all these lovely poetic words to her and winning her affections.
Okay.
But really, it's Serrano. And do you remember Stanley Milgram?
Who?
Oh, man. He's brought up in like 10th grade, you know, sociology. Stanley Milgram was an American social psychologist who in the 1960s did the very results-yielding yet very controversial test of the, it was like the authority test.
Oh.
Remember that guy?
I did not read about this.
Oh.
I don't remember.
He was...
I didn't pay attention.
Okay, yeah. So he did an obedience to authority test to see like why were so many Nazi soldiers willing to commit such atrocities during World War II? And his conclusions were it was the obedience to authority. People's regard of authority can outweigh their moral compass in a lot of settings.
Oh, right.
And yeah.
Okay.
The way he did this was he had people be a teacher and they thought they were just, you know, volunteering for a thing and that the other person was the subject of the experiment for like some new electroshock learning method where they would shock them with progressively higher voltages every time they got an answer wrong. And there would be a proctor there telling them to do it. And the person who was like the student, quote unquote, in the scenario was in on it. And they weren't actually shocking them. They were just acting. But as the each experiment went on, it was people would have to hit them with higher and higher voltage. And the student would eventually be like, please stop. I want to stop the experiment. And the proctor, the psychologist, the figure of authority in the situation would be like, no, keep shocking them. The experiment's not over yet. And they would act it out to such a degree that these people who were teachers thought they were murdering people because eventually the student would just like play dead.
Oh, no.
And the proctor would be like, keep shocking them. And it was found out that like 65% of people continued shocking them to like the lethal state.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And despite them all, you know, all coming out at the end and saying this was an experiment, I'm not actually dead. It like fucked people in the head for life because they thought they killed people.
I don't doubt it.
So Stanley Milgram.
Yeah, oh my God.
That guy. Also did a study.
Okay, you know what? I think I did. I do remember learning something about that.
So yeah. That was Milgram.
Wow, yeah.
And he also did a study on Cyrenoids, which was based off of Serrano de Bergerac, the play, in which things said by one person, an unseen person, their dialogue, are spoken through a different person. And it had a lot to do with like analyzing prejudices of race and gender. They even did one where the PhD having psychologist would be feeding 12-year-olds things to say as they talk to like their teacher or something for like an interview for school. And the teacher just thought they were 12-year-olds. Like people will believe that shit is what the conclusion of that was.
Oh, right.
Is that as a Cyrenoid, it's something you can get away with. And so all this I found much more interesting than the actual movie.
Oh, yeah. That's
Sierra Burgess is a loser.
That is interesting.
Yeah. It plays into my headcanon themes of that she is someone who needs a psychoanalysis as she uses like psychological manipulation techniques to get what she wants.
Yeah.
Plenty of people online have roasted this movie just because Sierra Burgess is a bad person and the movie isn't really that good otherwise.
Yeah.
As a romance movie, It's not very compelling as as a protagonist. Sierra Burgess is not much of a protagonist. She's more of, it's more of like a,
no,
I see her as
this is a villain kind of like story.
The Joker.
Yeah, this is a
movie.
Yeah, it really
this
is.
This is more of just a prequel to a serial killer.
Yeah, maybe it is a, maybe it's a fall of a hero, you know, like she's a really educated person.
The ending of this movie definitely
a spiral or something. I don't
know. It definitely affirms everything that she did. Even the guy she was after was like,
yep.
It was like, well, you did a bad thing, but if you didn't do it, maybe we wouldn't have had this. And then they kiss and go to homecoming together. Yeah. Before we analyze this as a failed adaptation of Edmund Rostand's play, let's analyze it as just a failed movie in general. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's Barb from Stranger Things. So at first I was like, okay, interesting. Maybe this isn't as bad. It's a weird movie. I don't know. For some reason with this, this pacing of the movie, and just, I think with all our talks about her being the villain and stuff and being a sociopath, I was kind of like, I don't know, the way that the movie was paced, like I felt like I was watching a horror movie, really.
I felt like I was watching
but,
a horror
movie. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what it was. I think it got to my head that with all our psychopath talks.
The memes we were sending back and forth as we watched it.
And there's this like, yeah, I had this like sense of dread that you get when watching a horror movie of like, oh, you know, something's gonna happen. Something bad's gonna happen. Even like with the whole climax of the stadium and everything going to shit, you know, I was like, oh God, what's gonna happen? But I'm like, oh wait, it's a Netflix rom-com. It's okay. It's all going to be okay. But yes, I thought too, like, I think the performances weren't that bad. Not as bad as I've seen in, like, other, like, you know, like, obviously with, like, Hallmark movies. Like, it's not the worst I've ever seen.
It's not super campy.
But, like, it's not, definitely not good. It's still awkward teen acting, but.
Yeah. Shannon Purser is all right. Kristen Frosseth.
Yeah.
She was all right, too. My favorite was probably RJ Kleider. The guy from Blue Ranger from Power Rangers, he was very funny.
Oh yeah, yeah, he did great.
He has
a comedic presence.
Yeah, he has like a fun comedic niche. I think he's coming into his own, especially after Power Rangers, kind of a break for him. So it's fun seeing him in new stuff. I look forward to seeing what he does. Yeah. Hopefully, he can break out of like the comic relief best friend.
Yeah, mold. Hopefully.
But he was probably the most entertaining.
For sure, I agree. I don't know, the love interest. I don't know. He's just really derpy.
Oh, Noah.
Kind of awkward. I mean, I see what they were.
Whatever his name is, the man whose affections she vies for. I feel like he's funnier than he's allowed to be. He's in a bunch of shit on Netflix.
Like
yeah. And he's in every one. He's just like sort of the hunky derp. And that's kind of his only role.
And he definitely plays that up in this movie. And yeah, you're right. I think his humor is kind of suppressed during this movie a little bit. I feel like he could be a pretty funny actor as well, but
he reminds me of like a,
I don't know. I just he just seemed weird to me.
He reminds me of like a younger Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
He's a hot dude, and that's really just all he really gets to be. One of the movies I saw him get to branch out the most in was Man from U.N.C.L.E., where he's not the biggest guy in the room in that movie. That goes to Armie Hammer. Focused on more facets of his personality, and I think he did great in that one.
So I think it's in the same way as RJ Seiler is also kind of getting typecast as well.
Yeah,
it's just like they're kind of stuck in their typecast, and you hope that they'll branch out eventually. But yeah,
but a movie like this isn't really help with that. It's just like the stereotype,
and I mean it's
character archetypes.
Yeah, it's like Let It Snow, like that we reviewed in December. You know, it's just like that John Green vibes, I guess, and you know, it's just this. Yeah.
With a lot of horror
teenage
elements
angst. With a lot of undertones of horror dreadfulness. You know what she will become in her demise. But aside from the horror, though, they started the film and ended the film with like sort of a 80s synth. Totally plays off of that 80s music. This movie kind of reminded me of like Carrie meets Pretty in Pink meets
Carrie meets Pretty in Pink.
Sorry, Carrie.
The best description
to appeal to the horror side of it. Yeah, but Pretty Pink. You know, maybe a little. What was the other? Oh, I don't know.
The Shining.
Oh, yeah, just like maybe like Twelfth Night. She's the Man. Kind of reminded me of that.
Okay.
So yeah, The Shining.
A little Silence of the Lambs aesthetic to her.
So it kind of plays off of like I think they were trying to go more for like the John Hughes style movie.
Okay, I can see that.
I saw a little bit of that style in it. And, I mean, it's fine. It works sort of well in a modern sense, what they were trying to do. They kind of call back those type of movies. But, yeah, it's just, it's, again, with the criticisms, this whole catfishing ordeal and glorifying it at the end is a little questionable.
Yeah, it lacks the charm of the John Hughes movies in the characters and the relationship as a whole. So
yeah.
Then the tone goes from that to sort of an unintentional horror movie prequel.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It really does. Sierra Burgess, man. She's a scary individual.
Is stone cold. I think Sierra Burgess could give Black Widow a run for our money in terms of just cold, calculated, be who you need her to be in whatever circumstance fits her the most, whatever benefits her the most. So maybe this is the Black Widow movie that we didn't know we needed, since the other one is never coming out.
Yeah, maybe.
This is sort of the Black Widow prequel. This is
still being
delayed.
This
is the dark timeline Black Widow, where instead of
the
world making her cruel, but she has her own conscience, the world is a nice place, and she's just a monster.
She's the monster.
So I look forward to
her family life, too. It just spells out sociopath, too. I just feel like, especially at the end, she's like, I can't live up to your guys' success. And she's having a hard time living up to her family's legacy. And her dad, like, pulls a Dr. Jones in, like, Indiana Jones 3 and, like, makes her, like, recite authors based on quotes. He's, like, pulling a, like, when Indiana Jones' dad is, like, making him count in Greek or whatever.
You ever see the show
before he's allowed to, like, step into the study?
Prodigal Son. You ever see that show? It's about like a world-class detective who finds serial killers, and he's so good at it, and he knows him so well because his dad is a serial killer. And one of the themes in the show is that he doesn't know if it's crazy too, and if he's going to be a killer.
Ooh.
It's kind of like that. You know, her dad is this genius poet, a master of human language and emotion, and he uses it to write award-winning books. She uses it to con her way to the top like a true killer.
Yes. That makes sense. Well, luckily, she gets to vent her frustrations of obtaining her legacy by using her dad's genetics of just writing songs about her problems, which is good. That's a good way to...
That's a good outlet.
It's a good coping mechanism. That's a healthy outlet. It was a kind of a... it was a close call, but they were able to evade psychopathic tendencies by...
Maybe that's why the movie ends
through
so
song
well
and music
in her favor. She does horrible things throughout this movie. She ruins her friendships. She really just cons this dude, and they all just like her at the end. The guy's like, "No, you did a terrible thing, but it's okay because I like you." And the girl who was her bully and then her best friend and then whose life she kind of ruined, she's like, "I forgive you." And her other best friend, who she sort of abandoned for this whole endeavor, was like, "We're cool." Maybe they're not actually cool with it. Maybe they're just sort of, you know, the police came by and were like, you need to be nice to her.
The police. I really hope there was some type of police intervention because, goddamn, that is just...
left to her own devices.
That is some legal action right
there. Sierra Burgess is one of the most dangerous people in the world, honestly. She's
really?
A master manipulator.
Honestly.
I think she's been watching
she is a Palpatine
way too many Palpatine
of the John
theories.
Green universe.
Palpatine. of the rom-com verse. Sierra Burgess is the final boss.
The final boss.
All right,
boss.
But yes. More entertaining form. Headcanon aside. Yeah, like you said, the technical stuff, the pacing, camera work, it's all just very generic rom-com whatnot. The performances are so-so.
Yeah.
And this movie is like a on-the-line, average, you know, whatever teen dramedy film. It's just the plot and the character of Sierra Burgess that makes it so memeable and just so fun to hate.
Yeah,
it really, because it really...
Yeah. It really, yes.
She thinks she's ugly, which is sort of a similar start to the Cyrano de Bergerac movie. And so she enlists the help of the most popular girl at school, who would be the Christian character in this film, to win the affections of a guy named Jamie, who would be the Roxanne character. In where it deviates from the original play, it does so incorrectly. It's as if they didn't get the point of Cyrano de Bergerac. It's like someone read the play and was like, okay, catfishing is cool. Let's make a movie about that. Because in the play, Serrano and Christian, they fight each other over the affections of Roxanne without her knowing. They just, they're like, all right, buddy, let's rumble. And eventually they realize neither of them, through their own insecurities, are good enough for Roxanne. And they decide that together they can be one man good enough for her affections. In this one, the character, the Christian character, Veronica is her name, the one played by Kristen Frosseth, doesn't like Jake, at least not at first, not at all, really, throughout the movie. I don't think she likes him at all. She doesn't like him, so she doesn't have the same motivations that Sierra does. She's not like pretty but dumb to win over this guy. She wants Sierra's help to win over another guy who thinks she's pretty but dumb. So Veronica is really just trying to better herself. It might be for the wrong reasons, because it's to win the affections of a guy. But she actually wants to learn things and just sort of broaden her mind so that she can date smart college guys. Sierra manipulates her into doing this by only agreeing to tutor her if she is the face of Sierra's relationship. And she capitalizes on Veronica's shitty home life and personal insecurities to do so. And in the play, in the Cyrano de Bergerac play, Christian, he was a cadet in the French army, and he goes off to fight, and he suffers mortal wounds, and he dies in front of Roxanne for the sake of the love that he knew Christian had for her, and the love that Roxanne felt for him. Cyrano keeps the secret. He keeps the secret that they were sort of like 18th century catfishing her to his grave.
Oh, wow.
She eventually figures it out through hearing Serrano read his own letters that he wrote her, that it was Serrano's, those were his words the entire time, and just Christian's face.
Okay.
But even when she confronts him about it, as he's dying of someone dropping a log on his head, he's like, no, it wasn't me. I loved you, and Christian loved you, and yeah. So Serrano believes above all in the integrity of love. And while he compromises the integrity of his own identity for the sake of it, that's still above all what he believes in. And he will, even after Christian's death and even on his own deathbed, he will still tell Roxanne that you know, it was Christian who loved her just as much as he did, because he did.
I suppose that's a true bohemian Moulin Rouge way of looking at things, so I guess.
It makes him more of a tragic hero. And that he loves the integrity of love more than his own interpretation of it, more than the love.
Well, that's pretty deep. That's pretty complex.
For him and Roxanne, he values the love that Christian and Roxanne had equally as much, because they worked equally to con it out of her. It's kind of a backwards play. But Sierra Burgess takes this and she only values the herself. She got him into the ground. So she coerces Veronica into helping her con Jamie. She pretends to be deaf because Jamie's younger brother is deaf when she first meets him, and he doesn't know that she's the one who's been texting. She pretends to be a deaf person.
Psychopath.
She makes Veronica go on a date with him and do all the romancing. And then when they're about to kiss, she makes her make him close his eyes, take the kiss, unconsensual because he doesn't know it's her, scuttles away, and then he can open his eyes again. She only admits to the truth when Veronica, in a rage induced by Sierra's own actions, because, you know, Jamie thinks he's dating Veronica. He doesn't fucking know Sierra. So when he sees her at like a football game while they're dating, he gives her a smooch, which, you know, you would do to your significant other, because most people don't assume that their significant other is actually a meat puppet for a fucking con man. Trying to just fiddling with your emotions as if it's a piano.
40-year-old on the internet under the guise of it.
Most people don't assume their hot cheerleader girlfriend is actually some 40-year-old Reddit user. So Sierra sees Veronica kiss Jamie, and in a rage, she leaks Sierra's like greatest shame that she still couldn't pull her college boyfriend even after all she learned. She just puts that shit up on the fucking Jumbotron. She like hacks into her Instagram and just posts it everywhere. And only then does Veronica reveal hey, this woman is puppeteering you. Get out now while you still can. Then she runs up and she's like, no. I can explain. So we think this is where sort of the, you know, one would assume if we were going off the Cyrano de Bergerac play, of which they have completely gone off the rails from, that this would be the tragic hero moment where she learns her faults and not to do it again.
Yeah.
And she is instead vindicated in every way. At the end of the show, she comes home, roasts the shit out of her parents. She's just like, you're pretty and you're successful. I hate you. I'll never be.
You made me.
She's like, I'll never be as good as you. And then she runs upstairs and in the, over the course of 15 minutes, writes a song that everyone loves. She writes a song about sunflowers. I truly think that she is a master manipulator, a narcissist and a sociopath in every sense of the word. She knows just what to say and absolutely. When to say it. I don't doubt that she secretly had this song written all along because she knew when she was eventually made that she could just...
this was her contingency plan. This was her
contingency.
If it
she
all
could just
went
pull it
shit.
Out of her pocket and make everyone forgive her again. She really just knows how to gaslight everyone around her into doing her bidding.
Damn.
So she writes a song and she sends it to Veronica, and Veronica just loves it so much that she forgives her and goes to JB and is like, look at this pretty song she wrote. See, she's not a monster. And he believes it too. I don't know what fucking Jungian hypnosis shit she had going on in the chords of this keyboard driven song. She can just hypnotize people. And then, so Jamie comes back to her and is like, that was weird and it was wrong. But, you know, if you didn't do it, we never would have met and had this beautiful love. And then he takes her to homecoming and they all hug it out. And that's the end of the movie. That's what she learns is... is that I guess this was a no-no, but it worked, so and that's what the main
catfishing works.
Yeah, so that's the main criticism of this movie is its message that catfishing works.
Yeah,
as opposed to the themes of Cyrano de Bergerac, where it is not
right.
It's more of a tragedy about love.
And that's what I was hoping for at the end of the film. I was really hoping it wouldn't end like a John Hughes movie where everything's like okay in the end and everything works out. I was really hoping that she would like actually learn her lesson. Like, okay, that was really bad what I did. Maybe I was thinking either her and Veronica maybe find some connection together, or she's just like, all right, I need to focus on college and never do that again. And like, that was really bad of me and I messed up and I got caught up on this, on the social life that I just, you know, I just need to stick to my academics and what I am here for and not catfish a man ever again. So I was hoping for something like that where she really doesn't get the guy in the end. I was really hoping. And it turns out, it just negates all the negativity of catfishing by saying, it's okay, I love you anyway.
Oh, there's another thing she got away with in the movie. As she was pulling all of these shenanigans and gaslighting her friends around her, there was this other like side plot where the class had a poem that they had to write, and that was worth like 10% of their grade.
Oh, yeah.
And she, you know, she's like, "Oh, it's some real important thing for college, you know, and I got to get good essays out of my English teacher, good letter of recommendation." She doesn't submit the poem on time. This other girl, there's some other side character girl who goes unnamed, does it first. And she has this really cool, like, slam poetry that she wrote. And everyone's like, wow, good job. And they don't ever attribute that to her successes. They were like, wow, you got some competition, Sierra Burgess. The teacher, like, looks her in the eyes. Like, wow, the bar said hi, you got some competition. And then she submits her sunflower song late. Like, that's her fucking magnum opus of the human psyche. Now this shitty song about sunflowers can just make people do what you want. She gives that to her teacher late, and her teacher's like, I will write you a beautiful college recommendation essay. This is great. So this is really a story.
So everything worked out so well.
It's like the prequel to an Ocean's 11 character.
It really is. Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. I was even thinking, like, is the police going to show up at the end of this movie? You know,
is the police going to show up?
She's going to have like some really bad legal, you know, things. Maybe some juvenile where she really has to like really work on herself before she's, you know, and then it like delays her college thing or, you know, college aspirations because she goes to juvie. So it's like, I don't, but no, it just all works out in the end. I was really hoping that she would really learn her lesson at the end, but she didn't. And she has been enabled and now she is going to steal people's faces.
Now she's, yeah, now she grows up. She is the owner. In this movie, again, like you said, in the Indiana Jones thing, she was constantly, and her dad constantly has her reference, you know, old writers and poets and such. And she even compares Veronica in her tragedy to like a Dickens character in that, I forget the name of it, but it was like all looks and no substance, and everyone loved him for his looks, and he eventually loses his soul. And so I was trying to find or think of like historical parallels for Sierra to another character, and that's how I ended up on the Cyrano de Bergerac play, since it was based off of that. But since she's nothing at all like Cyrano, she's not even a duelist, she's a bit lame, didn't even see any duels. Yeah. The only real historical or mythological figure I could attribute her to was in Japanese myth, is the malevolent force of the Oni.
Oh my God, the Oni,
it,
wow.
It wears other people's faces and steals children in the night. That was kind of the only parallel I could find, since she's absolutely nothing like the play based on the character she's based on. What are your thoughts on that?
I was getting total just Carrie vibes. Like, you know, she's kind of, you know, she's not the most attractive person in the school. She gets berated by everyone. And I really thought she was going to have her revenge on the, you know, the most popular girl and become what she just wishes she could be. I wasn't sure, you know, really the whole stadium. I was kind of on the whole stadium scene at the end. I was kind of on the edge of my seat because I was like, oh my God, she's
gonna, like, what she's gonna, what like, she going to do? It did
kill Veronica. Is Veronica going to kill Veronica? Her? Is,
thinking
or is Veronica going to snap and then also become a killer? Maybe they're just like a duo face stealing catfisher villains. You just never know. I was scared for everyone that was there, the whole stadium and this whole homecoming football game. That was gonna that's be the disaster
big, yep that's when
that's
it
where
goes,
all everything it all comes wrong. Into play, you know, the whole Carrie situation, the homecoming Carrie situation. So I was like, oh man, what's gonna happen? But anyways,
yeah, I see. Thinking about this movie, putting it in a genre, any other genre than the one that it's in, makes it more entertaining to watch. Because then you could just come up with crazy headcanon like we did. Otherwise, you're just like, this is a really backwards, kind of just weird, boring Netflix romantic comedy.
Like this needed to follow She's the Man with Amanda Bynes, like. That was a full-on comedy, and the whole premise is absurd. Her dressing up as a man in all college men's sports and going through there. This I feel like this movie would have worked way more as a comedy, and it just was a weird drama piece, and just a teen angsty piece. And I'm like, if this was more of a comedy, I feel like it would work.
Yeah, I can see
it
that.
Would work way
if
better.
It leaned into the premise, and if it was at least self-aware,
yeah, it leans into the cheese
and like mocked
and
the premise. As
yeah,
it
self-aware.
Went, it could be better, but no, it like sort of idolizes it.
Yeah, maybe not as absurd as Moulin Rouge, but like that slapstick, like trying to cover up yourself. How she was like under the car texting Veronica things to say. Like that would have been a funny comedic bit where she's just like making noises and she's trying to cover up for it, and Veronica's trying to cover up for Sierra, and it would have been a funny bits like that. It would have been a funny comedy, I feel like. But this was just way too dramatic, and I think they missed the mark on what this story should have been.
And even the Cyranoid moments, as it has, the biggest one I'd see was the webcam scene, which just like in the play, Serrano is feeding Christian things to say, and eventually just says, "Fuck it, shut up, I'll talk. You just stand there and be a hot silhouette." And she does that with the webcam scene with Veronica.
Yeah, yeah.
So callbacks like that, or maybe if her character was at all like Cyrano de Bergerac, or even since she is the complete opposite, like you said, leaning into that, being self-aware and just going a little more slapstick with it. Or, you know, I like the spy prequel. I like the concept of the thriller. I like the horror prequel.
Agreed.
I think a better ending to you know, Jamie coming back and taking her to homecoming would be maybe Sierra shows up to homecoming just wearing Veronica's skin. She just killed her.
Oh my God.
And she just put it on like Leatherface. And
it
she
would
just
be,
goes to homecoming. And that's the end of the movie.
Sierra would be this new generation's Hannibal Lecter.
Hannibal Lecter, so yeah.
Yeah.
She has all these insecurities.
I think that would be an interesting premise.
She's like, I'll never be as good as you, mom and dad. unless I eat you.
Unless I eat you.
I'll never be as hot as you, Veronica, unless I eat you. And then
Jesus.
She becomes this Hannibal Lecter, finding and conning the smartest people and most beautiful people she can find into being alone with her so she can just kill and devour them and absorb their power. Like the Oni! Like the skinwalker.
Like the Oni, yes. Of native. Yeah. She has... It kind of enables her that she was able to steal Veronica's persona for her romantic life, and then she's like, well, I can't stop there. Who knows what I can obtain if I steal people's identities? Yes. And then throughout college, she's just taking other people's work, and then she finally, in the real world, she just takes over. She's kind of like Batman's Hush. Yeah, Thomas Elliot.
Yeah.
Stealing Bruce Wayne's face. So she like becomes like this masterful, like, corporate leader, but she's really Sierra Burgess underneath the skin wrap.
More like Sierra Bezos.
Oh my god.
Just steals Jeff Bezos' face.
I think we need to approach Netflix with
this. Yeah, I think we got a great follow-up to Sierra Burgess is a loser.
Zesty.
Sierra Burgess becomes Elon Musk.
We could bring back
the actress who played the detective in Silence of the Lambs. Like, we have a new mission for you. Even more dangerous than Hannibal Lecter. Celebrities are going missing, and we're not realizing that they're dead.
Corporate celebrity.
Until months later, because someone's been parading around in their meat suits for years.
Wow, that is brilliant.
I think that's more entertaining than the movie we got.
I think so.
Was there anything you liked about this movie?
I think I liked their attempts at like some of the John Hughes 80s stuff. Like, I get what they were trying to do. And you know, it's Barb from Stranger Things. So, of course, I'm sure that they're like, yeah, we'll try a little 80s spin on things. Mm. But that's it. Yeah, performances are not bad. I just, it sucks that they're in this type of movie. And yeah, the genre is just totally not correct.
Yeah, so. You know, I don't think I would have minded this movie if it was just a little tonally different. Was in a different genre, and Sierra Burgess was you know, portrayed as this sociopathic master manipulator that she is.
Yeah,
it's kind of like it kind of reminded me of the ending of Midsommar, you know, where everyone's sort of like celebrated.
Mm.
Do you see Midsommar about the Swedish cult?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Everyone kind of celebrates.
Okay, I could see that.
Danny.
Yeah, maybe that's why. Like the whole pacing of this film. Maybe I did get. Maybe that's what it was. It kind of reminded me of Midsommar.
It was, yeah, that's what the ending was like. You know, everyone just celebrated, you know, Danny overcoming, you know, breaking the shackles of her dependence on her boyfriend and really just coming into her own. But really, the movie was ending was she was just inducted into a cult. She doesn't know it.
Right.
It's not a good ending.
Right.
It's not a happy ending. She lives in a cult now.
No, it's a very dreadful ending, yeah.
They might even kill her. We don't know. That was what the ending of this reminded me. Like, yeah, it's a happy ending. She gets the guy. She goes to homecoming. All is well. Does she kill everyone after this? Kind of left up to audience interpretation. Well,
how is her college days? We just don't know.
What happens next?
Maybe next we find her, she'll be in like an abandoned warehouse. And it's like all this like, I don't know, reconstructing surgical contraptions and stuff to like,
fucking,
you
like,
know,
Buffalo
help
Bill
steal identities.
Skin dress in the background.
Jesus. shivers. That's probably the next time we'll see
Sierra
Burgess.
Yeah, and that's what we'll see in Sierra Burgess 2.
Netflix sequel. Here we go.
Serenity Bergerac's legacy is destroyed. Those are my thoughts on the movie.
Love is destroyed.
Love is destroyed.
So we go from Moulin Rouge this week of love above all things, and then Sierra Burgess of just completely destroying
herself
and annihilating
above all things.
The beauty that is love.
And butchering the themes of Cyrano de Bergerac, which is love above all things.
Wow. He was a true bohemian, and this was just like, nah.
This is like, nah.
This all this petty,
she wants
modern
college.
Day, stupid high school politics.
High school politics.
God, our generation sucks. Anyways.
Okay, well, thanks for tuning into this week, to today's episode, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in.
Appreciate you listening to our wild headcanon. So, you know, stay safe out there. Don't answer any DMs from anyone with the last name Burgess.
Yes, Or Veronica, for that
or
matter.
Veronica. Don't or ever date really anyone in the show. We don't know who she's got under her thumb at this point. Who's on strings, who's not.
It's true.
Don't trust anyone. Don't trust your friends.
Don't trust your own family or friends.
Don't close your eyes when you kiss people. You don't know who you're going to end up kissing. Nothing's real.
That's right.
Nothing matters.
Nothing's real. Delete social media. Delete the internet entirely, and you'll be safe.
Thank you. Good night.
There he is. Welcome aboard. Here for a glass of Boudet Dimon. I was just celebrating God's return out of the ground and back up into the sky. He and his odd little friends are forming some sort of league.
Do you have any idea what it's like to be a teenage girl and to look like this?
No, I have too much to live for and more important things to do. We have to level the playing field. To put it plainly, shouldn't we have a league of our own?
You know, it's easy for you to spout your self-esteem BS. But look at me. You're tiny. You're tiny and you're beautiful. And you've always been beautiful. This is what you stuck me with.